agree. This is excellent.
Oh, is it?
It is. We are Ghostly Talk,
yeah,
aren't we? We are. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
And thank you for tuning in another week. I forgot to look at the date. It's got to be something like the
31st.
Yeah, okay. 31st of July,
yeah.
2005.
Last day of July here.
Last day of July.
Mm-hmm.
What a month. What a month. It's been an awesome month for Ghostly Talk. I mean, I looked at the stats last night.
Oh, really?
Oh, insane. Insane.
Why?
People, I guess they're looking for stuff to do. And they want to and they want to hear about ghosts.
What a barbecue, God. Yeah. Who's the hell alone?
Oh, that's incentive. Listen to Ghostly Talk or go to a barbecue.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Well, we just got done watching that food thing on TV.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, I just learning how the American public's been fattened up to the point where they can't move out their couch anymore.
Yeah.
We saw the history of it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Now I know why I'm so fat I can't move off the couch anymore. This is great. This is great.
Finally went and saw The Devil's Rejects yesterday. I know Will did, too.
Sid Haig's movie?
Sid Haig, yeah. That's, we had him on a few weeks ago. Yep. We're actually at the beginning of this month. And I got to say, what an insane person Mr. Haig is. Interesting film, Will. We're going to play Siskel and Ebert for a second. What did you think of the film?
I thought it was great.
It was
cool. Definitely a thumbs up.
I got sick. I told you guys that before the show. I got sick. I literally got nauseous like 3 times during the film. And that's when I knew it was a good film, because I wasn't sick because of the gore and all that. Well, these people getting slashed up and thrown in meat grinders and had all these horrible, disgusting things done to them. I really think I got sick because I just hated the characters so much. I hated the villains so much in that film. Just the stuff they were doing to people, that I just really got sick to my stomach a few times. And Erica L. came with a little sis.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, are you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know,
I just hate them so.
I'm just old now, and I can't handle things the way I used to be able to handle. I don't have a cast iron stomach anymore. And God, it was gross. But it was an interesting film. It was really cool to see it finally. And
Was it crowded?
No. We went to a matinee, though.
Okay.
I don't like going at nighttime, because that's where you get all the cell phone talkers and the talkers themselves.
Guess where I am right now?
Yeah.
I'm watching The Devil's
Rejects. I'm watching a movie. Oh, my God. That's so cool.
It's all right, man.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? How does it end?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And then, like, the rest of the people take that person and pummel them into a bloody pulp in the middle of the theater, and then you move on.
Right.
It was an interesting film, though. It was pretty cool. I was glad to see it, and it was really cool to see Sid up there going, hey, I talked to that guy. we were walking out of the theater, me and my sister, and I'm like, yeah, I know Sid. Yeah, we go way back.
Yeah,
he's my boy, man. Yeah, we're trying to go and cheat down to Indiana, probably see him in a couple weeks or something like
we
that.
We talked
know?
For 2.5 hours.
Yeah, one hour. But Sid was really great. He was awesome. When he came on our show, you couldn't have asked for a nicer person. Just go back and listen to the archive. He was an absolute ball. We had a ball having him on, and it was really cool to see him in another crazed, filled characterization of this character named Captain Spaulding, a.k.a. Cutter. So, I as far as films go, it's no white noise, but...
Good. Good. I think I made my point perfectly clear the other night on white noise.
Yeah, it was cool. Check out. Yeah. Now, also...
Speaking of the other night, we did on Friday night. So, we worked 3 times last
night. We worked 3 days last night.
Yeah.
I mean, we're pushing, like, if we had 5 days, dude, I quit.
3 days was exhausting.
We were pretty burned out after, like... Because this past Friday, we were the interviewees.
Yeah, which was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it was, and I haven't had a chance to get that archive up yet. I'm trying to get a better version of the archive.
Right.
We had an interview on KQRP in Salida, California. They're one of our people that's going to be broadcasting us pretty soon, and they wanted to have us come on and kind of introduce ourselves to their listening audience out there in Salida.
And I think we alienated all of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I think
so that worked out pretty well. Yeah.
it turned in. I from what I understand, what Sandy said, it was supposed to only be a half an hour interview.
Was it like an hour and a half?
Pushing 2 hours, actually.
Almost 2 hours. Wow. We ate up the entire rest of her show.
Yeah, we ate up her whole show.
I feel so guilty, but I think they had a good time.
Yeah,
they were laughing and enjoying themselves.
Jessica and Sandy were both very cool.
Yes.
We had a great time with them. And it's kind of interesting to be the interviewee. We don't usually do that very often, but for some reason, like in the last 3 weeks, the last week and a half.
We had
Mr. Dean Abbott. That's right. The guy who had, you know what? He just emailed me before the show, and that interview's up. What I'll do is when I get into work tonight.
That's the one on the blog?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's
we got to put a link up.
Yeah, yeah. I'll do that as soon as I get into work tonight.
Okay.
You
work hard.
You don't. Yeah. How can I say that with any sincerity?
I'll do that. See you next
work. The first thing I do when I get into work is I'm going to work on the Ghostly Talk site. Yeah, he emailed me before the show and said, hey, it's up. He's like, I was going to wait till tomorrow, but I couldn't wait, so I just wanted to get it up. So he threw it up.
Well, we'll put a link.
We'll link it up tonight.
That way it'll be like almost coincidental with the appearance.
Yeah.
Plus, we were linked up on... What was the website that Charles had written that?
That's already up on the site, though.
That's up, and we have a link up to that.
iTalk News? Yeah.
So we had iTalk News, and then Dean Abbott's blog.
Yeah.
And we have
KQRP.
KQRP's interview.
Yeah, so, well, I still have to email Sandy about that and ask her if she has she said she's going to archive it. So I'm hoping that she still has a copy of that we can just throw up on our site, too, that you guys download, check out, and see how... It was pretty fun.
Well, we have our copy, but the levels for them are low. Yeah.
We were having a hard time getting them to come through, and it just didn't sound too great. And it kind of just sounded...
It would work. I mean,
it kind of sounds like another Ghostly Talk show, to be honest with you. It was like us, you know, perfectly crystal clear, mm-hmm. And then you hear like this faint...
But when we call a guest...
Yeah.
I think their audio comes in crystal clear as well.
We never had a problem before.
But this was, you know, two studios hooked up together.
Yeah, it just... It was something weird.
Something got lost in the translation on, you know, our... It just was...
Our complex system of wires and clicking gadgets... And transistors just did not do the same with theirs, apparently. And I think they had even more wires.
Well, they undoubtedly have a lot more,
gadgets. So, yeah, it was cool. I'll try to get that up, like, in the next couple of days.
What's that you got? It's a clicking gadget.
Yeah, it's a click, click, click. See? It just clicks.
What does it do? It clicks a lot.
It clicks. So, yeah, that was really interesting. Yeah, yeah. We had an interesting time this week. We had Adge on Wednesday, too. If you haven't checked out that archive yet, you need to. It's very important.
People are downloading it. It's in the podcast distribution.
Good.
And a lot of people are finding us on iTunes, and I love to hear that.
Yeah, you were talking about that before the show.
Yeah, I'm going to call Steve Jobs and thank him personally. Because it's absolutely amazing how many people are tuning in through that, and I'm so happy and so impressed, and they're sending emails.
Yeah, we're getting more emails now. Yeah, before it was hard enough to deal with it. Now, we're getting more. So yeah, I got you an iPod. Right.
So this lady emails me, and she's like asking about Morrow Road.
Yeah,
and I said, oh yeah, but it's lost a lot of its charm now that it's like paved and everything like that.
Oh yeah.
And she says, yeah, it's true. And then this was in an email exchange, right?
Yeah.
So I actually fired up my email reader and writer and did something. Mm-hmm. And they, I sent her an email saying, yeah, it's lost its charm. She sends an email back, yes, it has. But we had some interesting experiences and blah, blah, blah. And then I sent one back saying, oh, but there's an absolutely fantastic haunted site. I mean, this place I've seen real activity, and I was so excited, and I think it came through in the email about the train wreck site. And I even get... Now, uncharacteristically, I rarely give directions to anything,
mm-hmm.
but I gave directions to train wreck site, okay?
Oh, God.
I know, and normally...
You're going to out there next weekend.
I know, yeah. We'll have to go out there.
Yeah.
$5 cover or something to get to the train wreck site. But, you know, and I was so excited and everything, and she emailed back, thank you. It was kind of a, you know, I was hoping that she would be excited. Ooh, we're going to check that out, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't do email.
Back. Thank you.
That's why I don't do email.
Was it even capitalized properly?
It was all small.
So she just like, boop, send. That's it.
I think what'll happen, because I've been out to Trainwreck site.
Yeah.
Right? A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen actual paranormal experiences, or had paranormal experiences there. I mean, things that I cannot explain in any way, shape, or form that I would like to be able to, but cannot.
Yeah.
So, weird stuff happens.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, I really, really think that she'll probably get together with her bunch, go out there. Hopefully they'll see something or feel something or smell something out there. Mm-hmm. Or see something like the fingerprints or, you know, something really, really wild.
Yeah.
And email me back, like, absolutely freaked out, you know. What's that place? Oh, my gosh.
Right.
You know, because that's how I feel about that place.
It's a very interesting place.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I mean, you guys, everybody I've talked to said they've had some type of experience there, or they've captured something on film, or they've captured something on audio, or they've even smelled something. It's supposed to be like church incense or something like
that. I smelled it.
Church incense. What does church incense smell like, though?
Completely out of place. Very pungent. Very pungent, like, sweet and sour. I don't know. It's just really
just
bizarre.
Just go to a Catholic church on, like, special occasions.
Yeah, it's, like, smoky and pungent and kind of flowery.
I don't want to go to a Catholic church even on a special occasion. But, okay, I'll put my nose in the door.
It's kind of smoky smelling, but it's also pungent. I mean, I don't know how.
I'll go pick some up for you and bring it. We'll burn it here.
Oh, great. That's great.
I'll dig out a book and say hi, Mass.
Oh, even
that'll
better.
Be great. Yeah.
Let me get you a podium. I'll put it right here.
Awesome.
And then we'll just have you.
We'll have an altar and we'll sacrifice. Never mind.
What do you want to sacrifice?
Well, that used to be. I mean, it says in the Bible. You know, you're supposed to sacrifice your
for
goat or something.
Firstborn child.
No, you're supposed to sacrifice your goat because. Or
family dog.
Burn your goat or something because the scent pleases the Lord. Something to that effect. I'd have to look it up.
Goats smell like goat.
Well, maybe it's not a goat.
You smell like
lamb.
Goat?
I don't know, but you're supposed to sacrifice this thing, you know, because the scent pleases him. So if you want to please the Lord, you should be, you know, sacrificing your goats and other barnyard things. So, but what have... Or alpacas. But the... although you'd have to make one first.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't
I give this alpaca to you unto our high the Lord. Hear that. What the hell is that? What is an alpaca? My son.
All of a sudden,
we're caught. The jig is up.
Bush bursts into flames. And not George Bush either, but a bush off to the side.
What is an alpaca? The boy starts shaking.
Just like, you know, with Charlton Heston or whoever was in Moses.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody was in Moses anyway and went to that burning bush. And although I have to say my favorite is, was it a Mel Brooks film? They did the burning bush thing. Oh, my God. I can't remember now. Never mind.
I think I have a good idea what you're talking about.
It was insane. It was insane. So it had to have been Mel Brooks. He's insane. And it was absolutely hilarious. Oh, well. Anyway.
Interesting sight, though. It is. And I'll have to check in. Yeah, get some
What are we talking about? Oh,
we're talking about the train wreck site.
Yeah, the train wreck site.
I want to smell this pump. I remember walking out there one time. Excuse me. And I think it may have been even the first time I was out there. And we were walking up the trail to, you know, to the bridge itself. And I remember smelling a sweet kind of scent, a sweet type scent that didn't smell natural for the area.
If it was pungent and smoky and sweet.
This wasn't really, it was a while ago, but I remember smelling something that was more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
More sweet. It had an old, like, you ever, like, go to the supermarket during the day? Like, during the day, like, you have a day off of work, and you go to the supermarket, and every old lady you walk by...
Oh! T. Rose?
That's the scent.
Okay. T. Rose and powder.
Yeah! And, like, formaldehyde.
Well, well, you're actually you're getting close to churches. That's pretty close, actually.
That's the smell I smell. I looked down to see if I had a shopping cart for me that night.
Powder and what's effort, not effordent. What's that stuff they rub on for muscles?
Icy Hot or...
Yeah, Icy Hot and stuff like that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, or... whatever.
That'll be great.
Yeah, that's kind of what I smell. That's what it reminded me of. I mean,
maybe
it sounds ridiculous, but I, you know, that's what it reminded me of.
Well, maybe the senior citizen jogging club had just been through there or something like that.
Hey, look, there goes, okay, they're still here. Senior citizen jogging.
Look, it's a race. Somebody bring me a chair,
yeah.
And a book.
I've seen parades go faster than this. Wow. All right, well, I've just secured my seat in hell again.
That's okay. Will was following him in his car, and he was losing ground. So, there you go.
That was a scent that I picked up, though.
Okay.
That's a pretty ridiculous analogy of it, but it had, like, that old, like...
Okay.
Cheap hairspray. I've smelled
blue hair dye.
I've smelled dollar store hairspray before, and that's what it reminded me of also.
Mm-hmm.
Really cheap hairspray.
Wow.
Just that's what I got. I didn't get a smoky.
Right.
I don't remember a smoky.
Church Incense has a smoky, flowery, pungent. The only way I can describe it is pungent.
Pungent.
It's pungent. You know it when you smell it.
Yeah, okay.
Because you want to cough and choke and gag and... fall to the ground and worship the Lord, I guess.
I don't know. Anybody do that?
But you didn't do that.
We all kind of.
Then you didn't. Then it wasn't church.
What's that stink, man? Yeah, I just was like, I don't smell like it belongs here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I remember I said. I was like, I don't belong.
Well,
here.
Out of place odors are paranormal as well.
Yeah, it was something.
Especially when you're in the middle of like the woods
with no houses,
around, and it's like, wow, I smell something. Like from a supermarket.
And I didn't see any senior citizens jogging by, so...
Right.
I think it may have been something out of place. It could have been something anomalous. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. So, anomalies happen.
They do.
Especially
it's an interesting area. It's a very interesting area. Preston Dennett. Preston Dennett's going to be on tonight. We've had him on the show before. Very interesting conversation we had before. We're going to cover a lot tonight. We've been back and forth on the email, and Preston's like, I want to talk about this. Yeah, I want to talk about this too, and then this, and then that, and then this, and that.
So I think what I'll do is I'll just like pull down the levels and let Preston go, because I don't know. I didn't get the email or the fax with what he was.
Don't worry, this is going to be very interesting tonight. Trust
awesome. But everybody, stay tuned. We'll be back after this with Preston Dennett on Ghostly Talk.
We'll be right back.
Thank you. future of America is at stake. And frankly, many Americans are frightened at the direction we're taking.
Let's hurry up and do the show. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds good. This is still Ghostly Talk. I'm still Doug.
I'm still Scott L.
I'm still Will.
And, of course, Ghostly Talk is broadcast live from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Pioneer Radio Network. That's pioneer.rolo, R-O-L-O.net. Of course, all the links are accessible at our own website at www.ghostlytalk.com.
Which is slated for a web design here in the next couple weeks.
Oh, are we going to be working on that?
Yes, we're having an official corporate meeting with the graphics guy.
Well, I'm excited about that. This will be interesting. We're going to be working on that, evidently. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, with the amount of traffic that website gets, it needs a bit of a
fix. They've worn the graphics out.
Yeah, the bits are
they've worn
the
out.
Bits They're are eroding away.
We need to get new stuff up there.
And Ghostly Talk, of course, is produced at the Haunted Warren Winery in beautiful Warren, Michigan.
Yes.
Right
outside the pool.
Yes, and I'm going to be hanging out on the porch with everybody afterwards.
I don't know what's going on with that.
I don't know. They're having a porch party out there.
I don't know what's going on.
That'll be awesome. And at our website, you can get links to all the past guests. You can read the journals. I've got to write a journal entry soon. You can read the journals. You can, of course, go through the forums.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an amazing conglomeration of just all kinds of wonderful people, Ghostly Talk listeners, and just people who surfed in, just communicating with each other.
Yeah.
I love that, and I want to see that.
We're very happy to see that.
For this week, of course, we're bringing on Preston Dennett. Scott, let's introduce him and get on with it, because this is one of my favorite topics.
Okay.
So let's do it.
Let's see if I can destroy. I'm gonna do very well on this one, I promise.
Excellent.
Here we go. Preston Dennett is a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. We're very familiar with that here. He has done more than 50 articles published in most of the major UFO publications and is the author of UFO Healings and 1 in 40, The UFO Epidemic. He has worked with the television program Sightings,
mm-hmm.
National Geographic Explorer, and Encounters. I'm going to keep it nice and short like that. Preston, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, this is your second time back. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
Now,
I'm excited.
This is we had a great time last time, and I'm sure we're going to this week also.
That was undoubtedly, did we talk about the mysterious MUFON chapter up in Mount Clemens on that show.
I think we may have mentioned
the one at Marquardt Upholstery, but
I've been there. I've been there three times. Knocking on the door, like jumping up in front of the building. I actually set myself on fire one time just to see if I get somebody's attention, and nobody wants to come to the door for some reason.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting chapter up there they have in Mount Clemens.
Yes.
So they must be doing serious research and
like, we don't want to talk to you.
Right. Unless you've seen a UFO.
We're very busy.
Stay away. Right.
Yeah, they just come up in lab coats. Their eyes like bugging out of their head. We don't want to talk to you at all. Leave us alone.
That sounds like a bad horror movie.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. This week though, Preston, we wanted to talk a little. We all wanted to talk a little bit about out of body experiences because you have a new book out.
Right. Out of body exploring, a beginner's approach.
A beginner's approach, and that's great because I think a lot of people are beginners. They really are beginners.
I know I am.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah, well, most of the books, if you read them, they just dive right into the deep end, like it's easy to do. And so I figured I'd just take it from step by step.
Well, the one book that I had read, I have to go get your book now, because the one book I had read, which, there was a whole lot of them, of course, but the one that purported to have 10 different methodologies of achieving out-of-body experiences was the one by D. Scott Rogo. Of course, the just incomparable D. Scott Rogo, who, if anybody is familiar with him, he ended up he was very involved. He was a publisher and editor in the paranormal magazine
realm.
Yeah,
I've got all his books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's written tons of books, and he predicted his the method and time of his own death.
He did?
They say he successfully predicted the method and time of his own death. Don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But he did. He was indeed found. I don't remember dates and death dates and all that stuff. But mm-hmm. he was indeed found murdered in his home.
Really?
Yeah, I remember yes. that. Yeah.
And I don't remember when or where. It's probably California-ish, right? But that's. So we found out after his death how he was going to die. But they said that he knew beforehand.
He knew beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Were they able to prove this, that he was able to predict it?
Well, that's what everybody says.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be an urban legend. I don't know. But they say that he predicted the date and time and method
mm-hmm.
of his own death.
Wow.
So it's kind of interesting. So D. Scott Rogo wrote this book, you know, like How to Achieve Out-of-Body Experiences or whatever. I don't remember. But it had 10 methods. He said the one that works for him is going on a diet.
Really?
You actually go on this eating plan of sorts.
We're all done.
I know. I'll never get out of body again. I'm stuck here now because you have to go on a diet to do it.
Yeah.
But no, the way that works for him is that used to work for him on several occasions was to follow this plan of eating, you know, fasting and eating certain foods and fasting and eating certain foods.
Yeah.
And then boom, you're out, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was his method.
I never had to do that. I just eat whatever I want, really.
Okay, I like your plan better already. So how do you do it? How do you get out?
Well, I got interested in it, actually, after about 2 weeks after my mom died, I saw her ghost.
Okay.
Right? And at the time, I did not believe in ghosts. I was very skeptical of life after death and all of that. But it interested me enough to start researching the paranormal. And, you know, I got really into UFOs and ghosts and... Eventually, I read Robert Monroe's book, Journeys Out of the Body.
Oh, absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal book.
Great book.
Right. I've read several times now.
I've read the series. You know, there's that one, and then there's Journeys Out of the Body, and then there's the one after it. I can't remember, but he got a little bit in the whacked out zone for that one.
Oh, I know. Later, his third book is really hard to understand. another language.
Yeah, he starts talking about... zooming through space and time and dimensions, and I just could not follow it. So I was done. I figured, well, I'm going to have to go down to the Monroe Institute eventually. And then I, of course, never did, and then he passed away. But the Monroe Institute is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I could go eventually.
Yeah, well, I wanted to go, but it turned out I didn't need to. I just read his book, and I tried the exercises. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, they worked. I was amazed. It was actually pretty easy.
Well, for he had started, from what I understand, he was a sickly child. Robert Monroe was a sickly child. And I know I'm remembering this correctly, so I'm not going to even say that. I am remembering this correctly. He was a sickly child. He was home from school one day, and he was laying like on a daybed or something in his mom's house, in an upper floor of his mom's house, and he was dangling his arm over the edge of the bed or couch, you know, daybed kind of couchish thing.
Yeah.
And soon he could feel the floor, something like that. And that was his first out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
His journeys out of the body came about because he was, and that's the title of his first book, came about because of his sickness. But a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people, you know, you don't have to be sickly. You don't even have to diet in order to get out of your body. And fortunately, there are methods now that people have identified that work for a lot of people. And I've read several different things. Mostly, one of the things that seems to be a common recurrence, and help me with this if this falls in line with what you found out, Preston, guided imagery. And relaxation techniques.
Exactly, yeah. I've refined it down to a 3-step process, which is the first would be relaxation, physical. Most people just aren't able to reach that relaxed state where they can dissociate from their body.
It is difficult.
Yeah, I mean, people even in sleep still, you know, grind their teeth and clench their fists. So you really have to get to a point of relaxation where your body, you start to feel certain sensations, of like heaviness or lightness or numbness, things like this, or movement even.
I know. I clench my teeth when I sleep. Still, there's this. I know I do. It's an interesting idea too, because you're supposed to, the time you go to sleep, it is that time where traditionally your body, you need to just blow off steam. You need to sleep. You need to rest your body. And I know I'm one of these people that suffers from this. Maybe once or twice during the week, I actually feel like relaxed, or when I'm laying down in bed, where I feel like, oh, I just, okay, cool. I usually have a million things in my mind, and when I wake up from that sleep state or whatever it was, I really don't feel like I'm refreshed. I just get back up, smack myself on the head a few times, put my head underwater for about 15 minutes, and then I'm going again, right? And I know I haven't really truly refreshed and relaxed my body where I'm rested again, where I can perform my daily functions. I'm just kind of doing it. I know a lot of people are in that state. So that's a very healthy thing to do, to get yourself to that state. And that's step one, though, right, Preston?
Right. And the second step is just mental relaxation, just sort of quiet, making your thoughts quiet.
Okay.
Just letting them pass until your mind's sort of empty. That's, and then the third step would be just imagery, sort of a guided imagery, like you said. There's a bunch of different things you can do, but one of my favorite is just pretending you're running, mm-hmm. running as fast as you can, and that'll lift you right out of your body. Or another is just jumping up. There's all sorts of sort of guided imagery that you can do that'll work really easily. Just rolling out of bed.
Would that be along the lines of the sheep thing too? Because that's what my mom used to tell me when I was couldn't sleep as a kid. She'd tell you, okay, imagine sleep or sheep jumping over the fence or whatever it was. Would that be an example of guided imagery in a way?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's
why. That's guided imagery, but I don't know how conducive that is to getting you out of your body.
Well, yeah, sheep don't make me very comfortable.
Yeah, sheep are, well, alpacas could do it, maybe, but you'd be running from alpacas should you ever, encounter a real one.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, all you need to do is relax to the point where you begin to feel these vibrations, really.
I have felt that once in my life.
And it takes me about 20 minutes, usually, and sometimes less, sometimes more. But once these vibrations hit, you basically just swoop right out of your body, and you can have all sorts of amazing adventures.
See, the thing that bugs me about that is I've gotten to that point one time,
mm-hmm.
and it's like electricity running just under your skin throughout your entire body, mm-hmm. and it shocked me. I mean, not shocked like electricity shock, but shocked me like, oh my gosh, you know, all this stuff is going on my body. And so it did the opposite for me. It brought me back. I mean, my instinct was to then all of a sudden, you know, jump out of the recliner that I was in. Right. And I did.
Robert Monroe, he said it would be like a mild electric shock. Mm-hmm. I experienced that as a severe electric shock. That's what I thought was happening to me. I thought I was being electrocuted.
Right, and so did I.
It was scary the first few times. Really scary.
The one time it happened to me, I was just absolutely freaked out, and I did. I got out of the chair that I was physically. I got out of the chair that I was in because I thought something was gone wrong, because it was not a mild electricity. Because I when I read that, I thought it was going to be a tingling sensation. This wasn't tingling. This was more like electricity running throughout your entire body, right. Just under my skin, and it was scary. So I never achieved
it. You were
it
there,
that
though.
I was almost there then, huh?
Absolutely. You were absolutely right there, ready to go out.
What happens next? How do you do it? Because if I do ever attain that feeling again, I'll recognize it, obviously, and I won't be scared of it, but because now that I know what it feels like. But what then?
Well, that's the first step, the emotional barrier. They call the astral body is also called the desire body,
mm-hmm.
or the emotional body, because once you pop out, you're suddenly faced with all of your repressions and suppressions and all the emotional baggage. And basically, have you heard of the term hungry ghosts?
Heard the term.
Those are ghosts who are like stuck to the,
right, they always,
the earth environment because of, you know, some insatiable appetite or attachment.
Mm-hmm. And Robert Monroe talks about the ones who desire sex all the time. And
right.
That's,
well,
a very,
that's what happens.
PG-13 rated book.
Well, that's not so bad. Jeez. I mean,
that's what happened to me. Absolutely. Every time I'd pop out, I'd have to eat a bunch of food. And then I'd have crave a sexual experience, which was easy to manifest because when you're in your astral body, every thought that you have manifests around you in total reality, at least on some planes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not on the earth plane, but on the astral plane.
So that's a, that's this emotional barrier you have to break through, though.
Right. And for most people, it's fear. You know, it's really scary at first. I remember, like, the third time I did it, I thought I actually died. And I was looking at my body in bed, and I'm like, that's it, I'm never doing this again. And I popped back in my body, and I woke up, and I was really excited and happy because I had actually just done it. For real, right? And so after that, it took me a year. I could only get out for maybe a minute or less because I was so excited. I was so happy to get out that I just fly through the sky or fly, run around the house or, you know, fly to people's rooms and stuff like that, go through walls, basically explore the physical world.
And then you could only do that for about a minute, you said?
Right, because I was just, it was really hard to maintain that state of consciousness. You have to sort of learn how to see, how to move, and it's a completely different environment.
Is there a time, like, change? I mean, would a minute there seem or be 5 minutes here, or is it pretty much equal?
Well, it's pretty much equal at first, I think, but once you start to advance, absolutely, yeah, time changes. If you're way up on the higher planes, a lot can happen in just a very short time. Time sort of collapses, and because you can collapse space. It's all, time and space are an illusion, right?
Right.
The higher you go in these astral planes, the more you can collapse sort of space and time. And once you do this, you start to have precognition of the future, and you can actually go visit past events in your past and things like that.
In your past or in the past of the universe?
Either, actually.
Yeah, because Robert Monroe was talking about seeing the Earth before humans were on it.
Right, you can
like
do that. Absolutely.
Jeez.
I remember one time I was flying out of body and I wanted to go see the wreck of the Titanic, right? This is when that movie was out.
Okay.
And I thought, this would be something to see out of body in the past, you know, a historical event. And so I popped out of body and I was going through these barriers, which I guess are like dimensional barriers. I don't really know. But I found myself in this really foggy place and I was flying along. Felt like 100 miles an hour, but I got very impatient because I know I only have like 2 or 3 minutes of consciousness. I'm like, well, I can't wait to get there, so I just dived down through the clouds to see what was below them, and I ended up in this really, it seemed like the ancient past to me, around dinosaur times, and I landed in this field, and I was sort of searching the plant life to see where I was, and it was like a jungle area, and this lion came and it attacked me, so I flew away.
Wow. And this was, but you said this was more or less prehistoric,
but not in our timeline or not in our time.
Yeah,
right. I had a distinct sense I was in the past.
Oh man, and you can do this. You can do this on a personal level, and you can do it on just a, like you said, Doug, a universal level too.
Right.
Well, it depends how good you are at it. I'm not very good at it, you know. But I'm trying.
You're better at it than I am.
Yeah, you're better than both of us.
What about those experiments? I think it was, I don't know if it was Keith Blue Harari or other someone else, but that name's ringing a bell though right now. Was
right.
Working on out of body experiences with others, where they would agree, okay, we're going to both. You know, and they were separated physically. Him and his, whoever he was experimenting with, were not like down the street or, you know, roommates or anything like that. They were separated physically, and they had agreed that, okay, on this date and time, we're going to, you know, attempt to get out of our body and then meet on the astral plane. So they were working on that. So what about folks you've met out there? Have you actually met folks and talked to them?
Absolutely, yeah, living and dead. But it's really hard to verify. I've met a lot of my family members and they're kind of subconscious. I said, will you remember this? And they said, no, I won't remember this. They're kind of a weird dreamy state. And I saw my sister and she's like, no, I'm not going to remember what happened. And so I manifested a UFO, which I thought she would remember as a dream, right? And the next day she didn't remember anything. And I've done that with other family members. But one time I was out of body and I searching for my mom, who is deceased, and I've seen her actually several times. But instead, there was a family friend there. His name is Rex, and he's living. And I'm like, Rex, what are you doing here? He looks great, because normally he's not very healthy, or at the time he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't say anything. He was kind of dazed, and he looked at me, and we hugged. And I went back to my body, and I thought about calling him, but he's really not my friend. He's my father's friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked about him, and it turned out that he had just had a stroke.
Oh, my
at
God.
That time.
Wow.
And,
Well, can that be, as far as a stroke, for example, could that be something that would kind of like, I mean, even if you don't pass on?
Well, he may have been an NDE at that point, or out of his body because of the pain.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Know.
That's what I was thinking. He was having a near-death experience.
And it kind of knocked him out of his body, maybe not by his own choice, obviously, but he ended up on the astral plane, too, with you guys, and that would explain, obviously, because he doesn't know, he isn't consciously trying to do something like this, that would explain why he was kind of like, huh, what's going on? What am I doing here? Well, I'm tripping out. What's going on? What am I doing? I'm sorry, go ahead.
At first, I thought a lot of this stuff could be dreams, but, you know, I started to get proof, and that was one incident. You know, another incident, I was flying around, and I'm like, you know, this could be a dream. And so I was determined to fly somewhere and record the details and go there physically, right? Someplace I didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to do that. I flew under this bridge and I noted all the detail. You know, there was litter there and grass banks with, you know, plants growing on it.
Uh-huh.
And I went there out of body, physically afterwards, and it was just like I saw.
Wow. Well, the thing I wonder, too, is that, you know, the astral plane, when you do something of this sort, you say, like, for example, you just said that you noted this bridge on the astral plane, that you went there and checked it out, you got the details.
Well, it wasn't on the astral plane, it was in the physical world.
It was in the physical world.
Right.
Okay, see, that's what I'm trying to differentiate here, is that when you go out of body like this, you're still part of the physical world.
It's, at first you are. Mm-hmm. You know, the first few years, that's what I spent most of the time, is just exploring the physical world, but now when I pop out of body, it's really hard for me to stay in the physical world. I sort of pop out into the upper astral dimensions, where you can do all sorts of experiments, like ask about your past lives,
mm-hmm.
or visit your higher self, or visit people who are deceased, things like that.
Okay. So there is this barrier that you, with practice, obviously, with practice, you can break through this barrier and move up to the higher astral planes, like you just said. You're just not limited to the physical world then.
Right, but I would actually like to be able to explore the physical world more readily, but it's very difficult to do. You're kind of a fish out of water. You're naturally drawn towards the upper planes,
mm-hmm.
because that's where your astral body vibrates at.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. So that's where I mean, obviously I can't get out of my body. I've tried it so many times.
No.
Well, I've done it.
Well, you know what?
Hmm.
People actually go out of their body every night. Everybody does.
Okay.
And so it's just a matter of remembering. And this is really one of the major tricks. It's just making it a priority to remember what happens to you each night. Each night as you go to bed, give yourself an affirmation saying, I will remember everything that happens to me tonight.
Well, here's the problem that I have. Maybe you can help me with this, Preston. For the last 7 months, I have been the lightest sleeper ever, I think, as far as myself goes. In my life, I usually am up and down an average, I'd say about 3 or 4 times a night. I just get up, get a glass of water, look out the window, maybe check my email or something like that. And I can honestly say there's been a few times where I've done this in my sleep because it's been very... I remember doing it, but I really don't. I remember like doing the act of like checking my email, for example, but I don't remember the details of that event, like what email I checked, whose email did I look at, for example. I just did
right.
it, right? Or I get up and get a glass of water or whatever. But I do this 3 or 4 times a night, and I mean I'm not arguing this, but I don't really think I'm going out of body. And then
no, but
I'm up too much.
You're a good candidate for it.
Why would
Absolutely.
I be? Why would I be? 'Cause
light sleepers are really good at it for some reason.
See, I don't see how you could be good at it.
Well, you see, what it is from my studies, it's you have to be conscious while you're in this state, because you consciously remember the only way you can like control things is with your conscious. Your subconscious can go willy-nilly and have a wonderful dream or nightmare, right?
Right.
But your consciousness is the key. You want to remain conscious in this state so that you will remember all the stuff and you have the opportunity to take control.
Okay.
Exactly. It's all about lucid dreaming. You have to become lucid in your dream state.
That's definitely reassuring for me then.
Well, here's an interesting thing. I was studying this stuff as an avid student would, and of course one of the techniques that folks say is take control, you know, get into a lucid dream state and take control of your dreams, and from there that's a great launching point to go out of your body. So I was dreaming this series of dreams, and at one point my house had become a bar. I mean a club, okay. A dance club, bar kind of thing. So I was sitting there on the couches in my front room, which there are none, but it was a dream, remember?
Yeah.
And I was sitting there with a drink in my hand, which is really uncharacteristic of me.
Yeah.
Unless it's Diet Pepsi, but this was a drink because it was a bar. And I said to the guy across the aisle from me, he was also sitting in this lounge area, and I said, "I remember you from my last dream." And then, boom, of course, it became lucid.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, right. I knew, I'm dreaming. This is a lucid dream. I can launch out of body. So I said, okay, well, where do I want to go? And this is going to sound absolutely insane, but I thought, I want to go to Brazil. So all of a sudden, I'm in this swirling tunnel. It was yellow and brown and swirling and going around, and I was zooming through it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I was like going somewhere.
Yeah.
And that startled me enough to pull me back, and I woke up. Because I was like, I don't think this is what it's supposed to be or whatever, and I was awake. And of course, I was probably really, really close. But
you're absolutely doing it. A lucid dream is an out-of-body experience.
Wow.
It's just that you just don't have quite full awareness of it, that you're out-of-body. But when you're absolutely lucid in your dream, you are out-of-body already.
What I should have done, you know, looking back, and what I may do when I have another one, is once I'm aware that I'm dreaming, explore where I am. And you know, not want to go anywhere spectacular, but, you know, like, I want to go to Brazil, you know, but because that was my instant thought once I knew I was lucid dreaming. And I should have just said, I'm in a dream. Oh, let me explore around and see what I can find.
Yeah.
That should have been what I did, but it's not what I did.
This is something...
No, that was good. You can lay out any command and it will actually happen. So you can learn about your past lives. You can visit foreign places. Like I said, visit deceased loved ones. I've called out to see my past lives many times, and it usually takes you to the traumatic death scene of your supposed past life, right?
Wow.
I don't know if this is real or not, but it sure feels real.
Well, let's talk more about that after a break, okay? Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
If you want, Preston, if you feel you'd like to share... maybe we can discuss some of your past lives and some of the stuff you've seen.
Or past deaths.
That's
kind of scary. Yeah. But, well, hey, all right, the morbid section of Ghostly Talk may be coming up.
Right.
But no, it is fascinating because this is exactly the kind of stuff I would like to study.
Mm.
So that's why I'm going to have to pick up the, you know, out-of-body explorations.
Mm.
Out-of-body exploring.
Out-of-body exploring by Preston Dennett. I'm going to have to pick that up. And add that to my growing and growing collection of stuff that I would like to do. So, after this break, we'll be back with more from Preston Dennett.
this is Devin from Ghostfish Files, reminding you to tune in to Ghostfish Files every other Saturday on www.ghostfishfiles.net.tc at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you there. Oh, man, I really gotta get out of here. Later.
Hi, this is Lisa Butler, American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena. Our website is aaevp.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
Drunken Dialing. Drunken
Dialing. Just when you thought it was safe. That call.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
So touchy.
Oh.
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 There's a kangaroo
kickboxing
in my
body.
Oh.
www.drunkendialing.com.
Good night. See you at night.
Hi, this is Tamara Thorne, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk with the hosts of Ghostbusting, Scott, Al, and Doug.